Om Gyan Timidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshuru Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I am very, very grateful to be with all of you this evening. My special gratitude to Yash, Avanti, Vedant, Nirvan, and Shloka for opening the doors of their home for all of us. Thank you very much. While walking to this platform, I inquired from Avanti, what would you like me to speak on tonight? She instructed me to speak on the subject of knowledge. So I had a few seconds to prepare. The third verse from the seventh chapter of Sri Bhagavad Gita, Krishna explains how rare in this world true knowledge is. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kaschin mam veti tatvata. Out of thousands of people, only one even endeavors for perfection in this world. And of those who have attained perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. Tattvatam is the Sanskrit word for truth. To know God in truth. Not superficially, not fanatically or sectarianly, but practically in truth. This word tattvam is also revealed in Srimad Bhagavatam. Vadanti tat tatva vidas tatvam yajganam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. Tatva means truth and tatva vid means one who knows the truth. And advayam gyan, which means the absolute truth, is one. It is non-dual. It is beyond all dualities, beyond all relative considerations. A relative truth is one that is dependent on a previous truth to exist for its own existence. But absolute truth means sarva karana karanam, the cause of all causes, the source of everything. That absolute truth is one. And the great seers of the truth, they understand this non-dual, one, supreme truth in three ways. Brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavan iti shabdyate. The first stage of understanding the absolute truth is Brahman. Brahman is the all-pervading energy of the Lord. In fact, wherever there's life, that is the presence of Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi. We are all Brahman. But in Bhagavad Gita, there is a distinction between the Supreme Brahman and the subordinate Brahman. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram Idam Uttamam. That Krishna is Param Brahma. The Absolute Truth is the Supreme Brahman. Mukti or liberation means to go beyond all the relativities of material existence, to crash through the boundaries of ahankar or the false ego, and to enter into the pure state of consciousness. That is one realization of the Absolute Truth. And the next stage of revelation of the Absolute Truth is Paramatma, the Lord who is seated within the heart of every living being, who is the witness, and ultimately, the one who gives knowledge according to our particular desires and conditionings. That is the Lord in the heart. And the next stage of realizing this non-dual truth is Bhagavan. Bhagavan means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who possesses all opulences. Parasara Muni has defined Bhagavan: Aishwaryasya samagrasya viryasya yashasya shriya jnana vairagyas chaiva sanam bhaga itin gina. Bhagavan is that one supreme person who possesses all opulences. Aishwaryasa samagrasya means the proprietor of everything that exists. We can be proprietors of something. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Jagyatapasam Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, that he is the proprietor of all the universes. He is the proprietor of all that exists. Everything is emanating from him. Aham sarvasya prabhava matta sarvam pravartate. Therefore, the Absolute Truth is all attractive because he possesses all wealth. And he's the source of all wealth. And the next quality is strength, virya, viryasya. That the Absolute Truth is the source of all strength. Krishna says in Gita, I am the strength of the strong. When Krishna was just a couple days old in this world, he manifested his strength of subduing the powerful Rakshashi Putana. When he was only 7 years old, he lifted the mountain Govardhan. Recently, Yashavanti and family, we did Govardhan Parikrama, and 21 kilometers around. It was not an easy journey. It was very enjoyable. It was difficult enough to walk around it, but Krishna lifted it and held it with the little finger of his left hand for 7 days and seven nights, without a single callus on his lotus feet. That is strength. By the power of the laws of gravity, which is the energy of the Lord, all the planets and the entire universal existence are being held up. And yashasa, Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, is supremely famous, most beautiful, the source of all beauty, the source of all knowledge and all renunciation. One who has all these qualities in full is Bhagavan, and therefore all attractive.
when we speak of God, to understand the greatness of God is a very sacred ornament to our lives, because it carries us above all sectarian differences and all illusions. Srimad Bhagavatam, or Brahma Samhita, describes who is Krishna. Govindam Adi Purusham Damaham Bhajami Yas Yaika Nishvashita Kalam Ashesha Mula. That Mahavishnu, who is the original Purusha avatar, from whose body unlimited universes emanate, is not an expansion of Krishna. He's a Kalam Esh, Kalam Amsa. That means he's an indirect expansion of Krishna, an expansion of an expansion of an expansion. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha. Krishna is the supreme controller of all controllers. Every one of us have some power to control our own bodies, to control our own minds. We may have some control over our family or our business or some possessions we have. But who can say that they are the supreme controller? Ishvara Parama, Parameshwar, Paramatma, Param Brahman, Nityo Nityanam, Chaitanas Chaitananam, Eko Bahunam, Yobidadati Kaman. That the Absolute Truth is the supreme controller of all controllers, and all living entities are eternally part and parcel of that Absolute Truth and are ultimately under the control of the Absolute Truth. And yasya prabha prabhavato jagarandakoti, that the impersonal Brahman is the unlimited effulgent rays emanating from the Lord. And all the universes within all the creation are floating within that Brahma Jyoti. This is tattva. This is how we understand what is God. People can say that I know Krishna. He was born in his maternal uncle's house, Kamsa, in Mathura. And he played with gopas and he played with gopis. That is true. But to have an actual and real appreciation for who that little cowherd boy is, who is the son of Nanda and Yashoda, tattva is required. Knowledge. The living entity, part and parcel of the Supreme, is eternally given the quality of free will. Mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We are all part and parcel of Krishna. Therefore, we have the same qualities of Krishna, but in minute proportion. This means we are God in the sense that we are of the same quality as the Lord. But the Lord is the supreme controller and we are always subordinate. Jivarasvarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. The constitutional position of the spirit soul is we are servants of the Absolute Truth. And our oneness in its most fully developed state is the oneness of pure, unmotivated, unconditional love or prem. Prem is not the love of this world. Prem is the pure, completely developed nature of the soul toward God. Unlimited love. Anandam buddhivardhanam. That love is like an unlimited, ever-expanding ocean of happiness. But when the living entity, by its own free will, wants to try to enjoy in an egoistic way in this world, then we come under the control of the laws of karma. And what is the nature of the karma? For every action, there is an equal corresponding reaction. There are three types of karma described in Bhagavad Gita: karma, vikarma, akarma. Karma means to act in a pious way according to our prescribed duties. Vikarma means to act against the laws of nature and against the laws of God. When we produce good karma, we get good results. When we produce sinful karma, we create inevitable results that must come back upon us that cause us suffering. And there's akarma, activities that have no reaction within this world. Akarma is when we act yat karoshi yat ashnashi yat tohoshi tadasyat in the service of the Lord. Any activity that is done in a spirit of real bhakti, with real knowledge of God, it is free from all the reactions of material karmic existence. Neha bikramanasosti pratyavayonavidyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobhaya. Krishna explains, any activity that is done in my loving service is eternal. It is never lost. It is a contribution and an account that will forever be there for our benefit. But in this world, when we become too much infatuated by forgetfulness, which is the basis of ignorance, of our true spiritual nature and our relationship with the Supreme, then we inevitably act in so many ways by which the bondage of illusion is more and more perpetuated. Manusyanam sahasreshu kashchid yatati siddhanam yatatam api siddhanam kashchin mam veti tatvata. Thus, we live in a place where very, very few people even endeavor to understand the truth. And in those who endeavor for perfection, hardly one attains it. What is God? Krishna tells in Gita, Aham Bija Pratapita. He is the father of all living beings. People talk about God, and there's so much conflict, hatred, sinful activities in the name of God. Oftentimes, intelligent and sensible people reject the concept of God simply because of what they see in the name of God. And how could we blame them? It's easy to condemn an atheist. But what makes a person like that? a spiritually sensitive person is not simply judgmental, but they're compassionate. What has brought a pure spirit soul, a child of God, a lover of God, to the point of hating God? They may be to blame, but at the same time, in this material world, everyone is victims of everyone else. In fact, where I grew up in the Western world, most of the people I knew were coming from families that belonged to particular religions, but most people really couldn't care less about God. What is the value of believing in God? Because everyone we see that believes in God are hypocrites. And they have so many superficial sectarian ideas. But when Srila Prabhupada explained tattva, when he came to the West and explained actual scientific, authoritative knowledge of God, it transformed millions of people's hearts. God is not a Christian God or a Jewish God or a Hindu God or a Muslim God. We could create such gods with our minds, but that's not God. Aham bija pratapita. The Absolute Truth is the source of everything, the father and the mother of every living being. God is the God of all Christians, all Jews, all Buddhists, all Jains, all Parsis, all Hindus, all Muslims, all Sikhs, all atheists, all animals, all insects, reptiles, birds, plants, fish. To understand God means to understand this. There are 8,400,000 species of life according to Padma Purana. And after evolving through fish life, 800,000 varieties of fish, 2 million varieties of vegetables and trees and plants, and then birds and reptiles and beasts, there are 400,000 species of human life. But this human life is so rare. And the rarest thing in human life is the opportunity to understand the Absolute Truth. Having bodily pleasures and getting somehow or other gaining facilities for bodily pleasures, that is not human life. Because the animals are doing that in their own way. The scriptures explain that, forgive my crude language, but you know what hogs are always looking for. We have seen in villages, they're searching all day for that stuff. They're just searching all day for that stuff, the hogs, because they enjoy it. And humans, they're searching all day for money because they can enjoy it. Is there a difference? In essence, no. The difference between human life and the animal and the lower species is atato brahma jigyasa. The human being's special blessing is the opportunity to inquire about Brahman, about God. To try to understand sincerely, in tattva, in truth, who I am, who is God, what is my relationship, and how to realize that relationship. Tattva is so important. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Chatur Varna Mayastristam Guna Karma Vibhagasha. He descends to this world for the purpose of revealing the path for everyone. Krishna doesn't discriminate. Krishna makes his path to know him and become perfect, available for all. And this Varnashram system of four social divisions and four spiritual classes is not to suppress anyone. It's a perfect social order created by the Father of all living beings for the protection, the encouragement, and the education of everyone in human society. That's all. Krishna is the Father of every type of human being, whatever is our caste, whatever is our color, whatever is our nationality, whatever is our sex. And God is the perfect Father and the perfect Mother. Does a perfect mother discriminate a child because a child may have different qualities than the others? Because these are all temporary designations. Therefore, the Varnashram system was created by Krishna to give everyone, according to their natural inclinations, according to the work that they are most naturally suited for, to be protected, encouraged, and uplifted, everyone. But what happens? It happened in India, it happens all over the world. That people who are oftentimes in the category of spiritual authorities, because they're not actually living by the qualities they are supposed to live by. A Brahmin is not by birth. A Brahmin is a person who's willing to forsake everything for the welfare of others, who actually has the real inclination to study the scriptures, to understand the truth, and to live in such a simple way as a servant of the whole society to inspire that truth. But when Brahmins are not qualified, what do? That we are higher than you, we are better than you. And they categorize people, and they oftentimes suppress people. And that suppression, simply on the basis of the color of skin or the family you're born in, according to Krishna, it's demoniac. It's not spiritual, it's not holy, it's not religious. In fact, the scripture says, Rakshasas sometimes take birth in the age of Kali in Brahmin families just to spoil religion. Here in India, today is festival all over Bombay for Mr. Ambedkar. I believe he was born a Hindu from a lower caste. And he may have said some very critical things. I don't know so much about him. But what brought him to the point of rejecting his own religion and writing books against it? He was treated worse than an animal just because of a family he was born in. He was more educated than most Brahmins. But still, because he was born in a certain caste, he was persecuted. He wasn't encouraged, he was discouraged. And therefore reaction, revolution. The way Krishna created the Varnashram system is absolutely the opposite. The Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, everybody's satisfied, the Shudras, and those who are... It's just the way we work, the type of employment that we have. It's nothing good or bad. What's good is our integrity. A Shudra who has integrity is millions of times better than a Brahmin who doesn't. Everyone is supposed to be working together. The Varnashram system is like a body. Every part of the body has a function to serve every other part of the body. What happens if the legs are kicking the belly and the arms are punching the head and the head is just leading us in the wrong direction? It's a dysfunctional body. And that's what society is today to a large extent. But if the whole body works together for each other, because ultimately, Lord Chaitanya explained, Naham vi prona chan narapatira napi vaisya na shudra. I'm not a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. I'm not a Brahmachari, Sannyasi, Grihastha, or Vanaprastha. These are all temporary designations. They're temporary designations where we have certain responsibilities to each other and to God. And if we perform those responsibilities, everyone in society is inspired, encouraged, protected, happy, and everyone's making spiritual progress together. That is what Varnashram is about, nothing else. But Lord Chaitanya explained, in order for that to be working properly, we all must understand that essentially I'm an eternal soul, and every living being is an eternal soul. And we are all the servants of the Lord. That is tattva. That is truth. When Srila Prabhupada began this movement in New York City, he really didn't even have any followers, and he was registering his movement within America. And he was going to name it the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And one friend said, why do you want to alienate people by saying Krishna? You should use a more generic name, the International Society for God Consciousness. But Srila Prabhupada, he told that Krishna is such a perfect understanding of God. We're all little gods, and there's also a big God, and there's bigger gods, and there's the biggest God. But what makes God such a perfect object of love? That he's all attractive. That he's the supreme object of everyone's love. So when we understand Krishna in truth, then when we hear his beautiful pastimes, we chant his holy names, we can gain the maximum benefits. Because we could really put our heart and our soul into Krishna consciousness. Thus, the Bhagavad Gita is so very, very important for all of us to understand in truth. The living entity in this conditioned state has four defects. So how can we see the perfect when we are imperfect? How could we know the perfect with all of our imperfections? We have a great tendency to make mistakes. We have imperfect senses. We are invariably illusioned. And we have the tendency to cheat others. So with these four imperfections, can we understand the perfect? Through the ascending process, no. But through the descending process, is it possible? Therefore, Krishna tells, Paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami yuge yuge. He personally comes to this world again and again and again. And who could say God cannot come to the world? And God could do anything. We cannot limit God by our own imperfect condition. I cannot take other forms. Mystic yogis can. But God has created every species of life. He can take on any form he wants and remain one. He can come as Matsya, as a gigantic fish, and have all the opulences of the absolute truth. He can come as Varaha, a big boar. He could come as Narasingha, Vamana. And he appears in this world to reveal himself. So the Lord spoke Bhagavad Gita. In other places he revealed the Holy Quran, the Holy Bible, and other great scriptures, Granth Sahib. Krishna presented Bhagavad Gita. And in the Gita he is giving scientific, logical understanding of who he is, who we are, and how to achieve real happiness. He's giving us step by step the path of perfection. Krishna has put his own devotee, Arjuna, into our state of illusion just to teach us through him. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tattvata tyaktva deham punara janma naitiba eti sorajana. Again, what is truth? Krishna explains, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities in this world never has to take birth again in this world, but attains my abode. And those who surrender to Krishna, they are called Mahatma, according to Gita. Mahatmanastu mam parata daivim prakritim ashrita. That a Mahatma is one who is living under the protection of my divine energy. A Mahatma is one who is constantly engaged in my loving service. Bhajanti ananya manasho. One who is worshipping Krishna with love. Satatam kirtayanto mam yatantascha tirtavrita. One who is always chanting his names and who is endeavoring with great determination to serve him. Krishna categorizes that person as Mahatma. And when we associate with such persons who are perfect or striving for perfection, then it becomes very easy for us to reach perfection. Tadvedi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. Krishna has explained in this way, if we want to understand the truth, we must approach people who know the truth. And who knows the truth? Evam parampara praptam. One who repeats the word of God as it has been understood and realized by the Mahatmas, the great Acharyas, that person can impart truth to us and show us the real path of progressive spiritual realization. A saintly person must be examined by their qualities. not by some superficial activities. A saintly person is not someone who simply performs some miracles. A saintly person is one who is tolerant, compassionate, self-controlled, and intoxicated with love of God. And one who speaks and acts for the inspiration and enlightenment of others. Lord Chaitanya, he gave an order. Bharata bhumi te hoila manusya janmajar. He said, everyone born in India, it is your duty to understand God or Krishna. And para upakar, to perform the supreme welfare work for all humanity by engaging whatever God has given us, our intelligence, our resources, in uplifting others to know and love God. It is the special, special responsibility of people of India. Because it is obvious, even in our travels of the world, we could see, and it is also in the scriptures, that however misled India has been by foreign powers, and however much it has been subjected to political crises and poverty and other such sad problems, the inherent nature of practically anyone of Indian origin is so close to God. When Srila Prabhupada came to the West, he said, the people of the West are this far from Krishna, but many of you are coming this way. But he said, but the people of India, everyone, they're this far from Krishna. But due to so much propaganda, people are running this way to try to somehow catch up to the people of the West. But Prabhupada said, if we can somehow just bring the people of India to understand tattva jnana, knowledge of truth, they're only this far away. And such a responsibility to share that great wealth with the world. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was traveling from Shantipur to Jagannath Puri, he was a sannyasi who was very strict, because in those days, 500 years ago, things were quite orthodox in comparison to today's world. So he was traveling with four others, and as they were walking down the road for some way, Lord Chaitanya asked them, did any of you bring any money? And the way he asked that question put fear in their hearts. They said, no, my lord, we would never bring money if we're traveling with you. Well, that's not the way people are today. Usually, did you bring any money? No. And he said, if any of you have brought anything, you must go back. Because when we travel, we are completely depending on Krishna. We are not depending on our own arrangements. So they did not dare bring anything with them. In fact, one time, one of his devotees, Vasudev Ghosh, he was a servant of Lord Chaitanya. And he served Lord Chaitanya. They went begging from house to house, and they got some prasad. And Lord Chaitanya finished prasad. And for digestion, he asked Vasudev Ghosh, Govinda Ghosh, was his brother, Govinda. He said, "Govinda, get me some haritaki." So Govinda went house to house and house to house. He couldn't find haritaki anywhere. Finally got haritaki. And he kept the Lord waiting a long time. So he gave him. Lord was satisfied. The next day, after lunch prasad, "Get me haritaki." Immediately he took haritaki. So, "How you got so fast?" He said, "From yesterday I saved extra." He said, "You have saved extra? You are supposed to be brahmachari, and you are stashing. You are stashing things. That means you must get married." That was how strict he was. He couldn't even store haritaki for the Lord. He said, "You must get married." Govinda Ghosh said, "I don't want to get married, my Lord." He said, no, you shouldn't be a hypocrite. If you're a brahmachari, you have to be a real brahmachari. If you're going to be attached to storing things, then grihastha ashram is the proper place for you to do that." He said, "But my Lord, you are my life and soul." So Lord Chaitanya gave him a deity of Krishna. He said, no, he didn't give it to him. He said, "I will appear to you and I will always be with you." So Govinda Ghosh got married and he had a son even. And one day he went really early in the morning to the river, to the Ganga, to take bath. And something, while he was in the, it was very dark, something just hit him. He thought it was just a piece of wood, so he just picked it up and threw it on the ground, but he didn't see what it was because of the darkness. He came back home, and that night he took rest, and Lord Chaitanya appeared. He said, "I came to you and you threw me on the ground." So, "That's me." So then he went back the next morning, and he saw there was a deity of Krishna, standing in his threefold bending form, playing his flute. His name was Gopinath, yes? And he put the deity of Gopinath. And it's a whole long story after that. It's a beautiful story. It's a famous deity even today. So Lord Chaitanya was strict when he told his devotees, "Don't bring anything." They took it very seriously. So as they were walking in Orissa, they were coming very close to Jagannath Puri, Lord Chaitanya came upon a little cowherd boy who had a pot of buttermilk, and he was trying to sell portions of that buttermilk. Chas. So Lord Chaitanya asked, "How much is this for this whole pot?" And the boy told him the cost. And he said, "My friends, they're coming behind me. They will pay." And then he drank everything. Gave him empty pot back. He walked on. In a few minutes, the devotees came. Mukunda Dutt, Jagadananda Pandit, Damodar Pandit, Nityananda Prabhu. They asked the little cowherd boy, "Did you see a beautiful sannyasi with a golden complexion?" He said, "Yes, he drank all my buttermilk. And he told me that you would pay for it." And they looked at each other. "He told you that we would pay for it?" This was very bewildering because he outlawed them carrying anything. So they said to the little boy that, "We don't have anything. We can't pay for it." And the little boy smiled and said, "That's all right. Tell Swamiji that it is my gift to him." So then they walked on. He had nothing left. He wasn't going to get paid. So he decided to go home. So he picked up his empty buttermilk pot, and it was very heavy. Very, very heavy. So he looked in it, and it was filled, overbrimming, with the most precious jewels. Diamonds, emeralds, rubies. For a cowherd boy, that was immense wealth. But that little boy just left all the jewels there, didn't even bother with it, and just ran to Lord Chaitanya, who was sitting under a tree a distance down up the road. And he fell at Lord Chaitanya's feet. He didn't care for the jewels. He was given the greatest jewel. Lord Chaitanya gave him the Purusharta Siromani, the crest jewel of all goals of life. And what is that? Prema Pumarto Mahan. There are four goals of life that are strived for by most people who follow religious paths. Artha, Kama, Dhamma, Moksha. People approach God or the devatas for economic development, religiosity, sense gratification, or liberation. But Prema Pumartha Mahan, the fifth goal, which is the crest jewel of all goals, is Prema, pure love of God. This is the universal principle. What is the great commandment of the Jews and the Christians? To love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, in Srimad Bhagavad Gita, such a deep, deep, deep understanding of God. And such amazing rasas of loving exchanges that we are taught we can have with God. They are all revealed. But before we can enter into any of the rasas of love, first we must become purified. Sarvopadiva nirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesa sevanam bhaktirukcha. Real bhakti for Rishikesh, the Lord of the senses, is only possible when we become purified of all superficial designations. Sarvopadi vinirmuktam. But unfortunately today, people are so much attached to the superficial designations. And we're so quick to judge people and label people and categorize people by superficial designations. When I was a young man, I was quite active in the civil rights movement, freedom for the African Americans or the blacks, because I knew such people. They couldn't get jobs. They were considered subhuman. They weren't allowed to use the same bathroom, drinking fountain. They weren't allowed in the same restaurant, sitting in the back of the buses. They were inferior, treated worse than people treated their animals, simply because they were born a certain color. Judgment, labelization. But what is the quality of a person's life? What is the quality of a person's consciousness? Sarvopadi vinirmuktam. That is the deathly nature of the false ego, the ahankar. That's the cause of all the wars, of all the crimes. Ahankar. I believe I'm Indian and somebody believes they're Pakistani, we may be coming from the same families 500 years ago or 800 years ago. But now we're different nationalities. I'm Muslim, you're Hindu. They're all upadis, temporary designations, that's all. And whatever our designation may be, we develop an ego, and that's how we see other people. Purification means purification of these upadis, sarva, all of them. Aham Brahmasmi. I'm an eternal servant of God. I'm Brahman. I'm a spirit soul. And how to serve the Lord in every situation, how to serve the Lord with what I have and who I am. Chaito Dharapanam Marajanam Bhava Mahadavagni Nirvapanam. In this age of Kali Yuga, the most powerful process of cleaning these upadis, these egoistic designations, and from these egoistic designations arise lust, envy, anger, pride, greed, illusion. But we chant the names of the Lord, especially to cleanse our hearts of this, to clean the mirror of our mind from the dust of all of these material misconceptions. That is the greatest benediction in this age of Kali. Kalera dosa nide rajan asti heku mahangana kirtanar eva krishnasya mukta sanga param brajait. This age of Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, but there is one benediction. Vedavyasa speaks this, that simply chanting the names of Krishna, one can attain the supreme perfection of liberation. It is so simple. And Nam Sankirtan can bring so many people together in the loving inspiration of God's presence, where there's actual interaction. Tonight we're sitting in this beautiful garden. I think it's the most beautiful garden in all of Maharashtra. It's a beautiful garden. And tonight it is ornamented by so many beautiful devotees. We have people from India, of all various divisions of castes and creeds of India. We have scholars from IIT, and we have simple people from villages. We have the sons of restaurant owners, and we have the sons of big industrialists. We have the sons of farmers. We have yajnik Brahmins. We have doctors, lawyers, movie actors, Bollywood actors, movie producers, simple people who just make flowers, sweepers. And we have people from India, and there are people here from Russia, from Ukraine, from America, from Croatia, from Australia. Did I say America? And we have old and young, and men and women. But how beautiful is this Sankirtan, where we all come together as one family. We become one in our enthusiasm to vibrate the holy name of Krishna. It is the most unifying experience to unite in the presence of the Lord's name. But in order to do so properly, Lord Chaitanya taught us, Trinadapi sunichena taror ibasi hishnuna. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. We should practice chanting the names of God with humility like a blade of grass, tolerance like a tree, eager to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. The more we expect respect, the more we are inevitably frustrated. Because the more you get, the more you need. It's like fire. The more you put fuel in a fire, the bigger and hotter the fire is, and the more fuel it needs. That's the way lust is. And adoration and distinction is the subtle form of lust. So the more we want respect, the more we need it, and the more we're frustrated when we don't get it. But a happy heart that's never frustrated is a heart that finds happiness in giving respect to others, because you can always do that. Getting respect is not always under your control. You could be sitting on a throne today, and tomorrow you could be thrown in the dustbin. That's the way the world is. But if we find happiness in giving respect to others, we'll always be blissful, because we could always do that. And tolerant and humble. That state of mind gives us the mercy of the Lord. And when we are all striving with this consciousness, and we come together to chant the holy names, then Advaya Jnanam, knowledge of the supreme non-dual oneness of God, and the enter in and to become one with God through our love, our individual and our collective love for God and for each other, will cleanse our hearts and cleanse the world. So I tried to spontaneously say something about knowledge. Forgive me if I confused you, but I tried. And I'm very, very grateful that you all tolerated me so nicely. Thank you very, very much.